So I'd like to speak with you this morning about the images of salt and light. Salt is critical, particularly when we think about the example of food. Now, I'm one of these people that, you know, too much salt and it just takes away the flavor from the food. I only need a little so that I can still taste the ingredients of all of it. There aren't a lot of people who, after a great meal that involves salt, will praise it and say, "Really, I loved all the salt on that meal." They'll talk about more the ingredients of the food itself. Perhaps it's a stew with meat and carrots and potatoes and onions. But on its own, it might be too bland, and so we sprinkle salt and it accents the flavor of those foods. And so if the salt is not there, we know something is absent, something is missing, and the meal doesn't taste as good. Salt seems to pull things together. We also know that salt is important as a de-icer. We know that in Northeast Ohio, when the roads are slick and there's ice, the different forms of chemical, when literally and figuratively, people are feeling hard and slippery and cold and the weather is bad, we have the gifts of the icer to melt away those hard substances. And I think there's connection there for us in our lives. How are we salted? How do we have things that we can spread in a salty way, in a good way, that de-ice people's hardness and how they are cold and how they are slippery, how they're rather received, and that we can embrace them and love them and care for them and warm their hearts? So in some ways we see not only the literal benefit of salt, we see how it works in other connectional ways and directly. Light is important. Light is so critical. I'm mindful of that. Now, this morning is an exception to that. That in Northeast Ohio, it's one of those places in America where you don't have a lot of sun. And you yearn for it. And some people yearn for it so much that it actually hurts them in the way of a seasonal affective disorder. It's chemical response. They yearn for the sun in terms of their mood, so they feel encouraged. And without the sun, they just don't feel like they have no life or even any light to give. So we know the power of salt, and we know the power of light. And we know sometimes in the balance of that people can come on too strong in offering salt and offering light. There's a balance in which God gives it, and we receive it, and we share it in the balance of nature and with one another. And so with salt again, growing up, my mother and my wife also, it's one of the few things that they do have in common. they will be starting a meal, and they will say, almost, they don't mean it in a way, but in, almost in a forced way, you know, that food would taste a lot better if you put more salt on it. And said, you know, I'm okay. So we have different strokes for different folks in body, mind, and spirit, and what we desire to receive in salt and what we give and share in salt. We do know, though, that in the extreme, if there's not enough salt in our lives, literally and figuratively, that life can become bland. Food is bland. And too much, it can become bitter, it can become overwhelming. And we're like, whoa, wait a minute. I appreciate the flavoring for the food and also the flavoring that you're giving me, but it's just coming on a little bit too strong. And so God teaches us in the balance again, literally and figuratively, in the giving and receiving of salt and light. And I love light too. And the experience is that I love light as if the sky is just ablaze with sun and blue sky as I'm hiking. Or even when I'm driving and I've got my sunglasses on, but wait, I know if I don't have my sunglasses on, or in the summer, if I don't have the air conditioner on, it's too warm. So God gives us again the gifts and how we balance light and how we share light. I have light sensitivities, and so the glare of fluorescent lights is too much for me. In my office, you'll see one side where I don't have lights on over my desk because it's just too much for me. So we need to be responsible but sensitive in all matters of physicality and emotion and spirit in the gifts of salt and light. Salt was very important. It has been important for centuries. It was important to the ancients. They used it to preserve meats. They used it as an antiseptic. And they also used it for flavoring of foods. And they didn't have the advancement as we do with all the flavorings. It was important to them in physicality. But Jesus takes it one step forward to talk about it in metaphor. To say that you are the salt of the earth. And that you are the salt of the earth. And encourages that we don't lose it because it's so hard to restore that salt. And what does he mean in that? That we maintain our relationship with God and Jesus Christ to keep our saltiness, to keep our flavor in the form of discipleship. That we be salty in the gifts that we offer in word and action for one another. And if we remain dormant with those or we don't use those or find ways to gather those in and share them, that our lives can become bland. Salt of the earth. Do you know salt of the earth, people? If you look that up in Merriam-Webster's dictionary, you'll see that it literally means a good and honest person or group of people. A good and honest person and group of people. And my, are we not starving in all layers of church and society and country and world to have genuine salt of the earth people? Do you know a salt of the earth person in your life that is honest, that is genuine, that flavors your life, that doesn't over-flavor it, but meets you where you are with the smile, the presence, the giving, the prayer, and all the gifts that give your life flavor? Who is that person? And are you being that salty person, that flavorful person to others? Because we're called to do that in our discipleship. We are called to be salt of the earth people. And sometimes we look at one another and we say, well, I'm not that kind of person. But all of us in some way have some salt, some measure to give to flavor with people's lives. You are salt of the earth people. The image of light. And so Jesus says, you are the light of the world. And then talks about the image of lights with cities and with people. And to let your light shine. In Judea and ancient Israel, in that part of the world, there were hills. And in darkness, where these cities were built on hills, they made sure that they had the illumination of lights with lanterns and candles. Because the ways were dark and treacherous and sometimes dangerous. So people used their focus, their draw to those hills with the lights, literally, that people had. And then in their homes, they had lampstands. They didn't have many windows. They might have a window where they would put that lamp with oil and wick up so it would not only illuminate inside the home, but it would go out into the streets and join the illumination of the other lights. And so there was this physical image, but the metaphor also that you cities of God, you people of God, you light of the world, let your light shine to others so that they might know the love of God in Jesus Christ. The power of literal and figural images of light and salt and how it wraps in love as children of God and how we are to spread it and how we are to share it with others. We're to do that in action. We're to do that in righteousness. And we are to take the lead in modeling of others who offer salt and light, and particularly light. You've heard the phrase, perhaps, and experienced it with someone who simply lights up the room. You know who those people are. When they come, there's just such a presence, there's an aura about them, there's a joy about them. And it's not always the loudest person in the room. It's not always the quietest person in the room, but it's someone who just naturally is present to give and receive, and you feel, at least figuratively, this glow of the room. And I would say, again, that's not always the extroverted person or just the introverted person, but it's all of us. As we come to worship today, we salt one another's lives, we give light to one another's lives, and we light up the room with our individual lights so that there is a glow as we go forth to the world. Do you see the connections? And when we experience those connections, we not only experience them physically in God's world, but emotionally and spiritually in the glimpse and intersection of God's kingdom in heaven and on earth. We understand and we experience more clearly what it means to live in righteousness, to live in discipleship, as God in Jesus Christ has individually gifted each one of us with the more or less in how we spread salt and light. But we do it in action. And we do it in responsibility. And we do it in sensitivity. The great St. Francis, who lived in the late 12th and early 13th century, who was peacemaker and about living righteousness and discipleship, that monk from Italy. You can go to Assisi today. I have been there. And you can feel a sense of light on that hill. You can feel a sense of salt of the generations before and how people lived that peacefully, but also assertively in action and discipleship. And he said, "Preach the good news always. And when necessary, use words." He was humble about it. He had humility about it. And it was grounded in the word. It was grounded in the flavoring of the word. It was grounded in the salt of the world, of God and prophets and ancients and Jesus and disciples and apostles who grew the church, flavored by scripture. And so for centuries, and I went there at night with family years and years ago, you could see lights on the hill. And it wasn't just the literal draw to it, but when we were there, we felt the importance of that message of salt and light. That as we would come away from that place in Assisi, away from Italy and back to the Americas, that we have a responsibility and a sensitivity and action every day to bring salt and light to others. And we might not have the exact words from Scripture all the time to do that, but we need to be living the gospel. Years and years ago, there was a group who had gathered together of friends and colleagues, and they were talking about their favorite translations of the Bible. You know, and I said, "Well, mine's the New Revised Standard Version," and someone would say the New International Version, and someone would say, "Well, I love the poetry and flow of the King James." And then somebody said, "Which I'll never forget," which made all the sense of the world and links with the life of St. Francis and others, where you preach the good news and when necessary, use words. And that is this. He said that his mother said that her favorite translation of the Bible was the one that you could read and live in action. That you could live in practical life, that you could live in serving and flavoring for others. That it wasn't just our favorite way of reading the words, but how the words are lived. That the translation becomes life, becomes action when we live it. It's not just the words, it's how you live the truth, how you live the salt, how you live the light. Are you living, as you translate your understanding and listening in response to it, are you translating that in a way that gives people a balanced sense of who you are in salt and light, and that it becomes a gift for others? And that when you come on too hard, too salty, or with too much light, that God and Jesus Christ is discerning the way with you and your interactions to balance that flavor. Every day, every moment, every conversation, we have this opportunity to live the gospel for who we are in salt and light. Finally, I leave you with this illustration. I mentioned the importance of de-icing as a way of understanding the safety and security of the world and the gift that God gives us to make roads clear, to make them less hard, less slippery, to make them more safe. And the truth of that is for our lives. Thursday, January 3rd, I'm involved with a covenant group, and we rotate with one another's homes, and it was my turn in Hudson to do that. And we had some snow and ice, which has been unusual this winter because it's been rather mild, but I hadn't shoveled the walk, and underneath the walk was a combination of ice and snow. So I thought, well, I'll just go out and shovel off the snow, and that'll be enough. And it wasn't, because the way our house is set with the rise and the setting of the sun and what the temperature has been, it was constantly in the shade. It wasn't getting any warmer. So I hurriedly grabbed it. It was a few minutes before they would come. I grabbed a bag of the icer, and I wasn't pouring just bags of it in it, but you know, you could get these de-icers that have different temperature levels. But I took a cup because I knew it was powerful. I only needed a little. And I also looked at the forecast, and I saw that the sun would come out soon as they were coming. So I'm sprinkling after it done, just enough, just a little. Just amazing how just a few kernels and all the way to where they would be parking their cars. And sure enough, not just with the ice working with the water, the sun started to make its way out and angled in a way that it melted that ice. And it ran away, and I was able to clear it so it was clean. And I thought about that image for me. What am I doing with people's lives that feel frozen, that feel hard, that are constantly in the dark? Because even in the darkness, no amount of darkness will win over light, will win over salt, and win over the elements of the earth that we can offer and contribute to make a way where it seems like there is no way. Are you providing a de-icing way with your lives, brothers? In a world that is so dark and so complicated and so complex, where people are literally and figuratively feeling frozen and scared to take one more step for fear that they may fall, or that in another conversation that they would initiate or not, that they might receive darkness rather than light, will you rise above it? Will you individually rise above it? De-ice, melt, warmth, genuineness, authenticity, salt of the earth, good, honest persons, good, honest persons, good, honest persons. Are you those kind of people? Because if you are, and you may claim that, then you will understand more fully, not just in the word on the page, but in meaning and application, what it means to be a righteous person. Not a self-righteous person, but a righteous person. And then, which brings me to the title and close of my sermon, you will lead a vital and vibrant life. Vitality and vibrancy. God calls you in faith to be vital and vibrant disciples of Jesus Christ.